do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, it's Empowerment Hours, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, and the crew coming to you live. We got another great show in store for you today. Go on, buckle in, call a friend. Let's do it, man. Come on with me. Better love. Yes. There is no greater love than for self and kind. No greater love. And welcome to Empowerment Saturday. Did you miss me? I'm back in the seat. And I want to thank Brother George and Sister Jackie for holding it down. Man, they did such a great job on producing that show on last week. And what a great job they did. Empowering, motivating, and inspiring, right? The first time around for the brother and sister. What a great, 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 great job. And so I was so inspired to listen to the show, to be able to look at how our people can do what it is that we need to do in the clutch. So I thank Sister Jackie, you know I love you. Brother George, you know I love you for holding it down. That's what it's all about. This is the People Show. It's Empowerment Saturday. It's African American Empowerment. And so now let's get to the tenets of the NAAEA. Our mission, simple mission, is to empower you. That's right, you. The African-American community. Who needs it more than we do? Think about it. Think about our history just here in America. The descendants of chattel slavery. Right? The descendants of those Africans who were brought to the shore and had to adapt to this culture, to this climate, and to be able to forge our way, right? To be able to create a lifestyle through slavery, black codes, Jim Crow, segregation, you name it, war on drugs, you just keep going on and on and on. Everything, burning down our towns, right? Sundown towns, regulations and restrictions that continue to plague us, and we continue to move forward. What a great, great group of people that have. Now, although I will say some of us are jaded, right? Some of us need correction for direction, and some of us simply need education. Yeah, we do. You know, it's written, our people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And if we can educate our people, and if we can grow our people and teach and train and develop over and over and over and over again, using our scholars, right, and our grassroots people and working together, oh, we can make a difference. Oh, we can make a change. Now, to the tenets of the NAAEA. Again, we are developing programs and services that support, inspire, motivate, and empower each of you, wherever you are in the country and around the world for that matter. We will collaborate and partner with existing community-based organizations at the grassroots level, but also at HBCUs, corporations, and institutions around the country to develop the concept of peace. You're probably asking yourself, Brother Marvin, what is peace? I'm going to tell you. Peace is politics, economics, athletics, which encompasses health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. We need, I'm saying week after week after week until we get it, a political agenda, right, that focuses on teaching, training, and developing our people to understand the American political system and how to effectively utilize the system in order to get the benefits that we need to recover, to heal from the situation that we were in through our importment. We are imported. Thank you, to this country and the things that we had to go to. We need to heal. We need to recover. I'm sorry. Some people don't like that, but we do. We're not asking for anything. We need the opportunity to use our tools, right, to use the system to get better. That's my thing, right? Economics, that's the E. We need an economic agenda. We need a money management system, right, that you understand the American economic system called capitalism and how to use capitalism wisely, how to use the American monetary system, right? And not just giving away your dollars, but learning how to invest it, learning how to understand how to manage money and the utilization of it to benefit your people for generations. Athletics. It's the A. I love it. Health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. That is taking care of your mind and your body. Who needs it more than we do? Again, I always say we lead the league in health disparities. All you got to do is do the research, right? We'll bring people on in the future that can tell you research, but you already know it, right? Who's leading the league in hypertension, diabetes, heart disease? Us, right? So we got to push away from the table. We got to have a fitness regimen, a health regimen, a wellness regimen. That's right. That really takes care of our physical bodies so we can be in position to educate our people, right? We got to stop being sick, and we got to have sickness to stop plaguing us. We continue to grow and develop. The next is culture. Oh, yeah. The C, the beautiful C. We need relevant cultural programs like this one and many, many more, right, that we need to connect together so that we can continue to educate our people on how to be prideful in our culture, in our ability to express ourselves at our authentic point, in our most authentic places on this planet. We could do that. We sure can. And then lastly is education, a comprehensive education, right? Not just the regular secondary education or post-secondary education, but the education that we get from being the best that we can be. We have to continue to do that to become the best that we can be. And now for the Stan Macklin moment.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah,
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing. But we must unify. And let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are, original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on earth.
Brother Stan is right. Are you willing to make a difference? Right here on earth, with your words, with your actions, your activities that work toward improving our people. I'm talking to people of color. I'm talking to African Americans. That's the conversation, right? And what we want to do is continue to grow ourselves, continue to love on ourselves, continue to respect ourselves and become the best that we can be, no matter where we've been or what we're going through. The time is now for that change. And so, again, we're developing and creating institutions that define our own reality and getting our own identity. And there's nothing, I said nothing, wrong with that. We're going over to Brother George for the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa moment. Stay with us. Brother George, right? Oh, yeah. Come on. What? Uh-huh.
We're not going anywhere. We rise here.
Brother George.
Welcome back, Brother Marvin.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for holding it down. Great job last week, man. Came through in the clutch, and so I appreciate you. Thank you to Sister Jackie. And what you got for us this week on the Willie Lynch Kwanzaa segment?
Yes, sir. Well, on the Kwanzaa segment, I have umoja, unity, to strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, nation, and race. And I think that we need to be cognizant of that at all times. Now,
true.
In the Willie Lynch segment, I want to make comments out of two books from two writers in the same generation. And the first one is going to be from a book that the author is going to be talked about today by Dr. Rogers, and that's Dr. Carter G. Woodson and The Miseducation of the Negro. And this is Failure to Learn to Make a Living. That's the chapter. The Negro boy sent to college by a mechanic seldom dreams of learning mechanical engineering. To build upon the foundation his father has laid, that in years to come, he may figure as a contractor or a consulting engineer. The Negro girl who goes to college hardly wants to return to her mother if she is a washwoman. But this girl should come back with sufficient knowledge of physics and chemistry and business administration to use her mother's work as a nucleus for a modern steam laundry. A white professor of a university recently resigned his post to become rich by running a laundry for Negroes in a southern city. A Negro college instructor would have considered such a suggestion an insult. The so-called education of Negro college graduates leads them to throw away opportunities which they have and to go in quest of those which they do not find. Now, I want to follow up on that thought in another book from the same generation, and I'm reading out of Dr. George DeGruy's Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, but the person that she's quoting is W.E.B. Du Bois, and this is written in his book, The Souls of Black Folk. Now, this is her quote. What happens to us and to our children when we are told by our parents that we can be, do, and have anything we want, that we are smart, strong, and able, while at the same time we are accosted daily with sounds, images, and experiences that tell us otherwise? Now, I'm going to read that a second time because I want to make sure that what was there was caught. Tell our children, I'm going to break it down and say it the way, tell our children that they can be anything, do anything, or have anything that they want because they're smart enough, strong enough, and able enough to accomplish these things. However,
on a daily basis,
when you look at the media is telling us otherwise. They're telling us a different story. They're painting a different picture of who we are. Now, this is the reference from W.B. Du Bois' book, The Souls of, referring to a similar contradiction. In The Souls of Black Folk, W.B. Du Bois wrote, it is peculiar sensation that back then they used to write with a lot of poetry within their writings. So sometimes it doesn't just get, they like to really express what's going on. This double consciousness, it is a peculiar sensation. This double consciousness, this sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of a world that looks on in amusement, contempt, and pity. One ever feels his two-ness, an American, a Negro, two souls, two thoughts, two unreconciled strivings, two warring ideals in one dark body, whose dog strength alone keeps it from being torn asunder. The history of the American Negro is the history of his strife. This longing to attain self-conscious manhood, to merge his two selves into a better and truer self. Now, you know, like at the top it says, as a world that looks upon us in amusement and pity, which is saying, you know, white folks look at us and say, you know, look at them niggas, you know, like they ain't got nothing. They, you know, they're just a pitiful lot, you know. And so that is relayed through the media to convince us of something that we're really not. But we're forced to, accept this as our reality through a constant battling of it through the news media. And so at the end, she ends this quote by saying, when we are faced with racial prejudice, hypocrisy from a hostile, dominant society, and when social inequality and powerlessness come to define our lives, it can have a serious adverse impact on what we come to believe ourselves to be. Now, that goes back to the quote that was in Miss Education about the brother and the sister that feel like the idea of running a business within the black community that other people get rich off of, that ain't a wise way to go. It's wiser for me to try to be a lawyer in a large white firm or some type of business that is offered to me through another source, which the Georgia Group is saying in her book is that we are not understanding how much the overall culture and the media are affecting our decisions to do things in a particular way that are really not in our best interest. You know, now that's what I threw out there is going to be continuous, a continuation into what Dr. Rogers is going to talk about today. So I just wanted to set it off with that, you know, two pieces of tidbits about our past. So, Brother Marvin, back to you, unless you got any questions for me.
Thank you, Brother George. I appreciate that. I just want to touch on one point before we get to Dr. Rogers. You said we are smart and we are strong and we are able. Let's just speak to that for a minute, right? From your heart, right? What does that mean for our people?
What it means is that, you know, I seen a quote the other day that really, it was on the back of a bumper sticker. And it said that you have all that you need. And that's a hell of a statement, you know, like by just having yourself, you got all that you need. Well, that's the way that our young people are. Our young people are strong. Our young people are capable of accomplishing whatever they will. But the thing is that the media kind of deters their will to want something that they really don't want. Now, that's a hell of a statement to say that. How you going to tell me I'm going after something that I really don't want? Because if it was really what our people needed and what you needed, then our people would be turning around our direction in this country as a group of people. We would be beginning to prosper, and our children wouldn't be killing each other at an alarming rate, and we wouldn't be going through the change that we're going through. So by using that strength, that capability, we would become a more educated people. We would recognize and respect the accomplishments of our ancestors and of our past, and we would be a completely different people, Brother Marvin.
I completely agree. And thank you so much, Brother George. And a part of this segment is, you notice he's reading from books, right? He's taking a book every week, and he is telling you what it is that's on those pages. So we're inspiring and motivating and empowering our people to read, right? Brother George is our resident scholar, and he's going to continue to give it to us fresh and hot off the press. Get yourself a book and start reading about your own history and your own culture. Thank you, Brother George. Are we getting ready to go over to Dr. Rogers in a minute? But first, I got to give y'all this. Who's going to do it? That's the question. Who's going to do it? Who is going to change our trajectory? Who is going to stop the violence amongst ourselves? Who's going to be the one to stand up and say we need change in our households and in our families? And the abuse that we learn, right? And the degradation and the disrespect that we have for our own color, our own culture, and our own humanity must stop. Who's going to stand up and say we need better educational standards for our children? Who's going to stand up and say we need to make a difference where our children can have safe playgrounds to play no matter where they live? Who's going to stop and say we need institutions that refine and define our reality? Who's going to do that? Are you going to be the one to say, I'm raising my hand for change? I'm an advocate for change because I know we need it. We deserve it. We deserve great institutions. We deserve excellence. We deserve the opportunity for our young people to feel safe just because they are existing as human beings. We got to preserve that space for them. And they got to want to live past 18 or 19 years old. They got to want to live to be an old man or woman so they can give back to the next generation. I'm asking us to make a pledge and a commitment today for change, that our children and our community, wherever we are, can feel safe, right? And not just because of the color of our skin, but the content of our color. Yeah, the content of our color. Our content of our color, our greatness, it's in us. It's in our melanin. But more than that, it has to be in our collective consciousness, right? The color is one thing, but the creativity, the ingenuity, the greatness, the inspiration got to come from within you. It's our time now. Let's commit to change. Let's commit to excellence. Let's commit to being accountable in all that we do and all of our ways, giving it all that we have, that when our days are done, our young people can pick it up and carry it forward. I'm asking you today, as we continue to celebrate Kwanzaa and Black History 365 days, let's be proud of who we are, and let's be an excellent example of our people and what we're able to do, where we come from, and where we're going. Because guess what? We are great, and I know it to be true. I know it to be true. Let's make a pledge today. I'm bringing Dr. Rogers in. Dr. Rogers, get ready. I'm bringing you in the right way. Here we go, y'all. Oh, yeah. Dr. Rogers, are you there?
Hotep, my brother. How are you?
Hotep, my brother. I'm doing well. You know I played that song for you, right? That's Bring It. We ain't going nowhere. We right here. They talking about go back to Africa. We can go back to Africa, but we taking some with us, and that's knowledge and power. And so we want you to bring that knowledge today. We welcome you to the show. We got Brother George live on the line as well. Dr. Rogers, welcome to the show. Before we get started, we're talking about bringing back, right, an evaluation of Black History Month, right? And I know that you are an advocate and a great fan of Dr. Carter G. Woodson, right, the creator of Black History Month. And somebody's probably saying, well, why we keep sticking with Black History Month, right? That's a great core foundation for us to build upon. So the question is, how did experiencing Black History Month just for the 28 days make you feel? And are we doing more than just going through the motions? How can we get our beautiful history and our great ancient past into the minds and hearts of our people today? And how can we get this knowledge of ourselves in our churches and our schools and our homes and our families and even in prisons, right? Because knowledge is power. And I want to begin with that right now. Knowledge is power. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Dr. Rogers. Let's talk about evaluating Black History Month and Dr. Carter G. Woodson.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, my brother. I love what you and Brother George are doing. Brother George, that was wonderful. That reading was a powerful reading, very powerful. And it really did fit right into what we're talking about. I mean, it's right in line with that. By fact, a lot of the things that you were saying are part of the miseducation of the Negro, the book by Woodson. So you're right on target, my brother, right on target. Well, you know, one of the first things I think, like we talked about last week a little bit, you have to kind of always ask the whys, which is very clearly what you're doing, my brother Marvin. You are asking questions about to our people. Why? Why is this? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? Because that process has a way of pulling out of us maybe things that we don't even think about on a daily basis. And that's really what Dr. Woodson did with the miseducation of the Negro. He was asking some critical questions. I mean, hard questions that we normally don't ask each other, but we must do that. And using that as a basis of discussion and discovery, you know, like in, for instance, Dr. Bridges' book, he asked the question, you know, how do we recapture the African mind? That's a hell of a question. How do you do that? You know, and you may not have readily the answer at the tip of your thought process, but I tell you, you'll go digging and try to think about that. I've thought about it over the years since he told me about his book. But how do we do that? How do you recapture somebody's mind? You know, and I think that's the way that we have to come at this study and evaluation. We have to ask ourselves, have we done that in this month-long study that all of us embarked upon, all these conferences that we were going to and these Zoom meetings and, you know, and all of this. I mean, wonderful things. I love the celebration of it. I love the ideas of it. But what did it do? What did it change? You know, and if you can't answer that in the affirmative, then maybe you need to reevaluate how you celebrate it. Because I've asked the same thing about Kwanzaa. We've been celebrating Kwanzaa for a long time. What did we learn about that? We talk about unity, but do we really know what unity is? Can we achieve unity as a group? Have we ever achieved it as a group? You know, those are, you know, you've got to ask that, you know. And so that's where I think, Brother Marvin, it starts there. And it starts with the hard question that you just asked a few minutes ago about us as a people and how do we do that. And that's the process. Remember last week we talked about the fact that Woodson created a machine. He created an intellectual machine to study our people. He did that because of the journey. He did that because of our travails, because of that path that we had come through, of the whole process of subjugation, you know, and the transatlantic and the Indian Ocean and the Mediterranean slave trade. You know, and looking at those institutions and looking at what did they do to us and how do we go back in now and undo this process. And so I think once we begin to focus there, you know, we can kind of come up with something as our ancestors, you know, have done in the past, because there have been some serious research and some uncovering of ideas that say some things about, you know, what we are, who we are, and what we're trying to do. And then, obviously, the bottom line, how do we pass that on to this next group of young people? That's why I'm so happy to see what you're doing, Brother Marvin, because you're a young brother. And I don't know your age, but it just, you have the sound of a young brother. You got the energy and the power. You're the warrior. you're the fighter. See, because your age group, if I'm thinking what I think might be your age, you were the fighters. You were the ones that got out in the street and fought. Martin Luther King was basically a kid when he started this march. Malcolm was a kid. And when I say kid, I don't mean that lightly. Mentality, I mean kid in terms of age and body and so forth. These were young people who were changing things. The elders were there. Some were supporting. And some of them were reporting in a way that was very, and they were reporting in a way that, you know, helped carry on forth. September, there was a civil rights worker by the name of September Clark and others who were supporting Malcolm, reporting Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, and others, and they were guiding them on from their elder standpoint. And then there were some elders who were complaining and criticizing and saying, y'all ain't got no business doing this, and so forth and so on. So what I'm saying is that your age group is that group that's going to fight. So we've got to encourage you, and we've got to continue to do that now, like right now, like we're trying to do. We got to encourage you, guide you. I've got some years behind me that I can tell you some stuff that maybe you might not know. I got more of them than I do ahead of me. Obviously. And so we've got to be more logistical about our study and our working with each other. We've got to create this format like you have here on Saturday afternoon. Like you have Dr. Bridges, he comes on, he does his book, he goes into detail, he talks about resources, talks about format, and so forth. Those are critical areas that we have to look at. And that's what Carter Woodson did. The Association for the Study of African American Life and History, which is what it's called now, it's called Negro History Reform, was a logistical machine. And listen, when I say a machine, it was like you would have like a washing machine. You put the water in the thing, put your clothes in there, turn some knobs, shut the top, and let it do its thing. And in about 20 minutes, you open it up, and you got nice, clean, pretty clothes. Well, that's what he was creating. He was creating a machine. He created a book, a journal. A journal is different when it comes to academic research. And that's one of the keys that we have to understand about what tools do we use as we try to study it. All of these are tools. And it's like a hammer and a saw and a nail. You don't put a nail in some wood with a saw. You got to get a hammer. You got to get the right tool. And that's the key, the same thing with academic pursuit. He created a journal. And see, the significance of a journal as a tool is that it is a recent study. It's something that's done like in the last few months. And they researched it very carefully. They brought it back to the table of ideas. Their peers sat down with them, and they discussed it, and they critiqued it, and they complained about it, and they agreed upon it. Whereas a book, you can't do that. A book you usually write one this year. People read it, and they have book clubs and studies. And you may not add anything to that book for another 10 years. But between the time you write the book and 10 years, a whole lot of stuff has changed. A lot of different things have happened. Whereas in a journal, I will write that today, and then I might update that journal 3 or 4 months from now. It's easier to do. And so he did that with the Journal of African American History and the Journal of Negro History is what it was called. And it is the only, and listen very carefully, it is the only journal that was done specifically in history for African Americans. Now, you've got some now that have similar things to that, but they're more sociological in nature. And you've got other journals. I think it's one called the Journal of African American Studies. I think it is. It's one of those which more reach into the whole circle of things. But there is no other journal of Black history except the one that Carter Woodson did back in the 1915 and 20s. And they still write in that journal. It has been passed on from different institutions. Morehouse College in Atlanta used to host publishing it. University of Michigan used to host publishing it. And different people do it. And these are folks who are basically trained, and you know, they're trained in the Eurocentric systems, but that, you know, they were trained to do it. And then he came out with a magazine. This is another tool in that machine. He came out with a magazine called the Bulletin, the Negro History Bulletin. And this was more light. This was like picking up a jet or ebony. Anybody. You didn't have to be a scholar to understand the language that may be in the Journal of Negro History. So you picked that up, and, you know, it had advertising and so forth and so on. You know, and then through the Association of Publishers, the publishing arm, of all of that, they used to publish books for other scholars who couldn't get published. You may have graduated, Du Bois may have graduated from Harvard with a PhD in history, but he couldn't go to Random House at that time or whatever the big publishing company was in the world and get a book published. Not that easy. Maybe down the line he could. You go back and look at any of W.E.B. Du Bois' books and look at who published them. That's what to do. Look at the evidence. Go get the evidence. Go look at the books that Richard Wright. Go look at the books that Langston Hughes. Look at the name of those publishing companies. These are not those big Fortune 500 publishing companies out of New York and Chicago. Now, they did do some, but they usually did it in conjunction with other writings as well. So Carter Woodson knew that in get that information out, I'm going to have to create a publishing arm to this. Now, you would think that he was making big bucks. No, he wasn't. He was going broke because he wasn't obviously getting the support that he should have gotten from us. And he couldn't get it, but he kept pushing. He kept pushing. There were a lot of contemporaries that were around at the time that worked with him. You know, a lot of those names that you think about, they worked him. Marcus Garvey worked with Carter Woodson, Carter G. Woodson. Garvey and Woodson worked together. Langston Hughes, they worked together. They wrote stuff back and forward. Carter Woodson wrote for the Negro World, which is Marcus Garvey's newspaper. He did some of that. Du Bois did too. Du Bois was not recognized by that Occidental community as a gifted scholar. They said he was okay, but they did not recognize him because, you know, his main force of his work was sociology, but he was not recognized as a Black sociologist. If you go back and you look through some of the journals of sociology, you would see some of the things that were written. They had organizations, for instance, around the country that were designed to bring the cream de la cream of scholars together to do studies and to look at different things. Du Bois wasn't invited to them. Not in the white world. So through the Woodson agenda and machine, they started their own. And they sat down and they talked about it. Now, what did they talk about? They talked about things like the migration of Black people from the South to the North and what were some of the trials and travails of that. What was it like for migration to take place, you know, throughout America? How to look at that? Woodson published the Journal of Negro History around 1920, was his first issue. Do you know what one of the articles in that journal was? The first article, one of the first articles in the Journal of Negro History was about the mulatto and the problems of the mulatto in Black America. So that's how far that problem goes back. And what he was talking about in there was some of the things that we're going through with families clashing over this light-skinned, dark-skinned thing that was killing Black America, literally killing. Marcus Garvey came to New York in the early 1920s. And one of the first things he wanted to do was obviously meet Booker T. Washington, because that was his hero. The other thing he wanted to do is he wanted to meet W.B. Du Bois. Now, let me tell you, a misnomer that has been said is that Du Bois and Garvey were enemies. No, they weren't. Garvey didn't dislike Booker T, and Booker T didn't dislike Garvey on certain ideas. Their clash came over that status thing, that Negro thing, and the fact that Garvey was getting more attention than what Booker T was getting, and what in some cases was Du Bois was getting. He wasn't getting the attention that Garvey was getting. So Garvey had gone up to the NAACP office in Harlem to meet W.B. Du Bois. And he was sitting in the lobby. He went to the desk and he asked the woman, if he came to see Mr. Du Bois, could he please tell him that he was waiting for him and who he was and what he was there for. And she told him to have a seat and she'd get him. So he said he sat down, and while he was sitting there, he said he noticed all these mulattoes walking back and forth. Just nothing in there but light-skinned people. He said he asked them, where are the dark-skinned people? Where are the people of the color? Where are the African bloodlines in here? Where is that? And he sat there for a long time. And he saw that right there as going to be a problem, because it's going to create a class structure. And it's going to create a conflict in class, or the illusion of a class structure. And as a result, he was right, because when Du Bois came out with that talented tenth thing, he came out with that was talking about class, that there would be only certain people that would be capable of being able to learn, and the rest of them would have to be students and some would be teachers. That was a big part of the Du Bois philosophy. And then when Alain Locke out of Howard University came up with his thing about the new Negro, well, when he talked about the new Negro, baby, what he was talking about is light-skinned folks that was running stuff. That was a major issue. And so Carter Woodson saw that, and he wrote that in the Journal of Negro History. Go get the only way to validate what I'm saying is go get the very first copy of the Journal of Negro History. They're available now everywhere, online, and look at what he wrote about on the first time, which shows you what's plaguing the problem. And then, like I said, the next problem is the migration. Another big issue that Woodson had to address was the people that were coming from the South to the North were uneducated. They didn't have uneducated to, you know, the European sophisticated world ways of life. And so they were coming here, you know, a lot of them were country. They didn't speak the King's English like Negroes were supposed to speak. You know, they didn't comb their hair. They were country. You know, they were coming out of slavery. They were coming out of hundreds of years of bondage, you know. And so the idea was, we got to do something for these country hicks. If you read Richard Wright's Native Son, he deals with that in that story, in that piece of fiction. He deals with the country Negro coming to the urban North and clashing. Because if you remember Bigger Thomas, if you go back to that story, Bigger Thomas had some of that characteristics. And Richard Wright deals with that in the book. If you read or either saw the movie Time to Kill with Samuel Jackson, a lot of that was the story of Bigger Thomas, which was borrowed from that writing in order to make, because some of the same thing was going on there. But, you know, it went off into another way. So that was one of the things that was a big issue. And actually, to the point where Murray McLeod Bethune got involved with that whole idea, is that, and Madam C.J. Walker, is that they wanted to comb out the kinky head Negroes and make their hair a little bit straighter so they'd be more palatable to white people. Woodson jumped on that in the Journal of Negro History. And he talked about that whole thing of window dressing. He didn't call it that, but, you know, if you go and talked about that whole conflict, you know, that we had with each other. Now, this is not stuff with the racist Southern white. This is stuff with us and each other. So one of the first things is get each other together first. So when you look at the chapters of the Miseducation of the Negro, you will see chapters that are designed around these concepts and ideas that I've just said. And that's why I was telling you about them. Because when you look, for instance, chapter one of the Miseducation of the Negro is called the Seat of Trouble. It's called the Seat of Trouble. In other words, where is all the problems coming from? Where's the bottom line to these problems? Where are they coming from? And then in chapter two, he wrote, how did we miss the mark? Going back to my brother's question, you know what you got to ask. And then chapter three, how we drifted away from the truth. Now, the first three chapters is not dealing with white racism, or which was there, and it was hard. It's dealing with each other. How do we do that? And then he goes on into some more things like the education under outside control and the things like that. The educated Negro leads the masses. That's chapter six. He talks about that. And then he has a chapter called Dissension and Weaknesses, the Loss of Vision. That's in chapter 10. And all of these are things that are addressing what I just told you. Now, these are actually, the Miseducation of the Negro is a collection of lectures that Woodson did, and they were compiled later years by his workers. The reason that the Miseducation of the Negro is so popular is that particularly it began to arise out of the 60s with the Black Studies movement. That's where it got its energy, is where we have it now. Because we were talking about in the 60s, in the late 60s, about reparations. And we were talking about what we had gone through. And two of the best sources for being able to document that trouble was Carter Woodson's Miseducation of the Negro and George G.M. James' Stolen Legacy. So these two books were used as documentation to help argue the reparations movement. And that's why you get them now. That's why they're so important. That's why they're so powerful. And these are contemporaries. And even he has one of the last chapters that he has in the Miseducation of the Negro. It's called The Study of the Negro, which is what he did. How do you study us? How do you look at what we did? My mentor from North Carolina Central University, Dr. E. Thorpe, wrote a book called The Mind of the Negro. Very powerful book. And he's looking at that. And Carter Woodson also did one too. But Woodson was doing it by looking at the writings and a lot of the things that Black folks had written to determine the way we were thinking. So Thorpe is doing it different based on historical significance and where things were going historically. And so he wrote that. One of the most outstanding chapters in the Miseducation of the Negro for me was where he jumped the black church. Because and he rightfully could do that. He was one of the only ones that could critique the black church like that because he wrote a book on the black church called The History of the Negro Church in America. So when Dr. Bridges told you recapturing the African mind, the only way you're going to be able to do it, you're going to have to go back in and look at people like Carter Woodson. So because he's telling you how you lost it. He's telling you how it faded away, how it got washed away. And so if you're going to bring it back, you got to go back here. We made a mistake to critique the black church as not being useful and was a sellout to the white man's religion. That's a mistake we made. And I would be willing to stand and argue that with anybody. Because, okay, first of all, the symbolism and the ideology that we find that the Africans were practicing was not even Christianity. It was African religion.
All right.
But adapted, you know, for the American race. You know, if you go back and you look, the Africans had a cross. All of the African religions were an ark. There was a cross. The Congo religion had a cross, and it had a thing like two parentheses around it. And this was the Congo cosmogony symbol. And what it meant was the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun, the living and the dead. That's all a part of it. I mean, there's a lot more you can go into it, but it's not enough time here for us to do it. Maybe some other time. So I'm gonna stop here. See if there's any questions, because
right.
I know I do a lot of stuff in there. So I'm open to, let's talk about it a little bit.
Okay, Dr. Rogers, thank you so much. Very powerful presentation there. I so many things to look at. And I just want to ask you first, let's go back to where you mentioned that Dr. Woodson said we must be logistical. And I know you mentioned that as well. Can you speak to that in terms of how we need to be logistical now?
Okay, yeah. Okay, we need to be, you remember in the in Dr. Bridges' book, what he did, we need to, you know, remember at the beginning of each chapter, he had the name of the chapter, and then he had a quote. He usually quoted Bob Marley. That was one of the most outstanding features. That can become a course in itself. Is understanding the diagram, the paradigm between that ideology of what he's trying to say, and that quote. That is a course. That's a logistical way of understanding where we're going. That's one way. Number two, in terms of logistically, we need to pull out concepts. And study those concepts. We need to study light skin, dark skin issues.
Mm.
You got to study that, man. We can't let that go. You're pushing that up under the rug too much. It's about to get down so far back up under there, you can't get to it anymore. And you know it's killing the black family. You know that. So we might have to study that as a system of study, as opposed to looking at people and those events. We might have to go back in. For instance, as another one, we've got to juxtapose history and our literature. Man, we've got some powerful literature. The stuff that Zora Neale Hurston was writing, we haven't done justice to that. You know,
wow.
We were so hard to keep in her and all that backbiting and cutthroating that was going on in the Harlem Renaissance during the time she was writing. We lost her. If it wasn't for Alice Walker, they wouldn't even know where she was buried. They had to go find where she was buried and create a tombstone for her. Because we got to fighting over her and fighting about her to the point we lost it. You know, so we got to logistically go back in and look at our institutions that surround our history, like our literature, our music. We haven't done justice to the blues. Muddy Waters was a philosopher. You understand what I'm saying? He was a philosopher. Those brothers that sat out there in the backyards in the woods of Mississippi and took them tubs and put inner tubes and strung them out, Brownie McGee and Sonny Terry, and playing that harmonica, that washboard tub, those were philosophers of our culture. And we're not recognizing that. So we got to go back in there and logistically look at some of those kinds of things. Y'all laughed at Reverend Ike, Reverend Ida Cole. You laughed at Sweet Daddy Grace. You know, you laughed at Bishop Mason. These were philosophers of our culture. That's what I mean.
All right. Dr. Rogers, brothers and sisters, you're being treated to a thorough history lesson today. And the names that he is throwing out, Richard Wright, and Zora Hurston Neale, and so many others, George G.M. James, to just name a few. Dr. Rogers, thank you so much for giving us this lesson today. I'm going to bring Brother George in now. Brother George. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Dr. Rogers. I have never heard the history of our people during that time period talked about the way you're talking about it today. I mean, you have set me in that era where I could feel and I could see exactly what you were talking about, man. I thoroughly appreciate, you know, what you've done today. You know, and I don't want to hold back, you know, so that we can get to the callers on the line. You know, but I just wanted to say that, brother. This was amazing. This was an amazing experience for me today. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank
you, Dr. Rogers. That's the E. It's for education, right? The more that we have knowledge and power, the more we can change things. But we got to learn. We got to know. We got to be willing to learn. And we got to be willing to step outside of our uniquely tied boundaries so that we can learn more about ourselves, our history, and our culture from an authentic standpoint. Let's go to the lines now. I'm going over to 7841. We have Dr. Rogers on live. He is on deck today. He is willing to fill any of your calls. 7841, are you willing to talk to us? Dr. Rogers and Dr. George, along with Marvin Rohn today. Welcome to the show. 7841, you're with us live. Going once, going twice. All right, maybe they just want to listen. And it's okay if you just want to listen. That's fine. I'll call you once or twice, and then we'll move on to the next line. But again, you're being treated. We're talking about evaluating Black History Month. And Dr. Rogers has just gone through Carter G. Woodson's book, basically a narrative of his life and some of his work. If you have a question for Dr. Rogers, feel free to speak that now, or if you got a comment or a question that you want to ask. I'm going over to 9282. 9282, you're live on Empowerment Saturday with Dr. Rogers, Dr. George, and myself. Do you have a question or comment?
Good afternoon, brothers. Peace. Hope everyone
good
is well.
Good afternoon. Hey, brother.
Yes,
how
sir.
You doing?
Brother, I'm fine. I'm fine, brother. I'm glad to be here, and thank you all for everything, as always, you guys are doing. I just want to make two quick comments, and I'm going to tie it to my characteristics of the one, and I'm going right back to the first characteristic. The one is honest with himself. We must be honest with ourselves as a people. And in saying that, we must remember and more importantly understand that this nation was founded and built by people who were liars, murderers, thieves, hateful, evil, freakish, wicked people who enslaved us as a people to build this country and to build this society. And if we being honest with ourselves, then therefore understanding that, it will be illogical for us to assume that we will ever be free and equal in this country, okay? And now tying that on to what Dr. Rogers said and Brother George said, we talk about education. I realized a couple of days ago myself, when I look at the educational system of this country built by those same people I just talked about, we have commercialized, or they have, education. In other words, you have to pay for knowledge. You've got to pay for education, when it should not be that way. Our children should not have to pay us for us to educate them and provide them with knowledge of who they are, where they've been, where they're going, and pull that greatness out of them, pull the God that's in them out of them. There should be no charge for that. Mm-hmm. But we've commercialized education. And the more money you can pay, supposedly, the higher you may look up to go in your education, meaning the better job you may get in the system. That in itself should, again, tell us a lot about this system in which we are now living. It's who was built by, we must remember that. And don't expect change because it was built by, never forget, who built this country, the men and women who built this country, who they were and who they are. And that's why we caught up in here. We talking College E. Woodson, miseducation of Negro. We got light skin against dark skin. This system, it was built for us to be the niggers that we become. The system was built for us to be, they made us into them. Okay? Murderers, liars, stealers, freakish people. Wicked by nature, that's not us. But the system, the men that built it have turned us into them. Some folks say we now little devils. Okay? And the bad thing about that is that when we take on bad ways, we do it better than them.
Mm.
We do it better than them. We run faster, jump higher, sing better. We take on their ways and we do it better than them because we don't know who we are. Therefore, the miseducation, not only of the Negro, but of the black man and woman. Okay?
All right. Thank you, brother.
Yes,
for calling
Dr. Brother.
Rogers, you want to respond to that? Appreciate you, brother.
Oh, no. My brother is right on target. He's right in the heart of it. You know, clearly a Woodsonian thought and philosophy that he's saying, you know, we are dealing with some very, very strange, wicked people. And they've done some terrible things to us. Terrible things to us. And he's right on target. Right on target.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rogers, and thank you for your call. We're going to the next caller on the line, 0946, 0946. You're live on the Empowerment Hour. Dr. Rogers, Dr. George, and Marvin Rohn, do you have a comment?
I do. Good afternoon. And I just wanted to say I'm with Brother George. Dr. Rogers, I really appreciate it. This, I guess it's a narrative style of talking about history. And I really appreciate your ability to tell the story in a way that doesn't necessarily, I don't hear you necessarily putting your own personal views, but kind of just bringing up the history and discussing it and leaving it with us to do the interrogative process of what really happened. These are some issues. We've got to look at them. We've made some mistakes. And so I just really wanted to say that I think, Marvin, I think this may be the key to reaching our community, this kind of narrative style, very historical, pointing out the facts, bringing up the issues that we know that are there, but with a tone, because we are an oral-based tradition culture, and one of my challenges of listening to a lot of people when it comes to our culture is that they will infuse kind of their opinion about something, which leaves the audience, now I've got to either reject or not accept your opinion, but it's more important that we get the facts so that we can come up with our own opinions and our own analogies and metaphors and really look at things. So I just wanted to say how much I appreciate it, this narrative style of historical prose here today. I think it was very effective, very informative, very enlightening, and was not boring on any level whatsoever. So, Dr. Rogers, thank you so much for the way you delivered this history to us today.
Thank you so much, my sister. I appreciate that. That really means a lot. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, sister. And before we get to the next caller, you talked about that Journal of Negro History. Dr. Rogers, can you tell us maybe some possible places that we could get that literature from?
Actually, it's online. And those who might have access, well, no, and even that's free now. There is a database called JSTOR, JSTOR. That's all of the journals, academic journals, that are probably in America, both African and Caucasian. And in that JSTOR, and you can register free. You can go on and just put JSTOR. If you have a Google account, they'll let you use your Google account as access to get into the JSTOR. And then when you go into the search portal, put the Journal of Negro History.
All right.
There it is,
folks. Knowledge is power. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. We're going back to the lines, if you don't mind. 5972,
yes.
You are next on deck. 5972, welcome to the show. You got Dr. Rogers live.
Hotep, my brothers, all three, Brother Marvin, Dr. Rogers, and Brother George. Hotep to all of you.
Brother Bruce, how you doing?
Dr. Bruce.
All right. I'm going to keep mine brief. I don't want to take up the time. But I just want to say that Dr. Rogers, and talking about Kaji Whitson's book, The Miseducation of the Negro, it actually was a stimulus for me doing my book after reading it, because I like what he said. And what I tried to do was actually take it to another level, because we realized that, as I said in the preface of my book, that sometimes religion is, or belief, pardon me, is stronger actually than fact. And Dr. Woodson really dealt with our people, which was very good, on the level of academia and those kinds of things. But I wanted to deal with religious education, because sometimes religion will tie us up more than actual facts will. So your belief is stronger than fact. It shouldn't be, but that's the case. And I'll talk more about that next week. But also, to some of the youngsters who are listening to the program, you mentioned that pencil test of Dr. Woodson. You didn't mention pencil test, maybe not specifically, but there used to be an usher at the church that would have a pencil in his or her hand, and they'd have to stick a pencil through your hair. And if that pencil didn't slide through your hair and didn't come out, then you wouldn't get in that church. If it got tied up in there like it would in mine, Dr. Rogers, or yours, then it would you wouldn't be able to get in the church, or the paper bag test. So that's that whole idea of color consciousness still exists even today in Black America. Look at the television. Look at the videos. Look at who they put out there. They don't put the beautifully Black sisters out there like they do the light-skinned Beyoncés and Mary J. Blige and some of the other sisters. That's all they just overlook people who have a whole lot of melanin. And that's not good, because we're one people. We should have one destiny and one God, as Marcus Garvey said, one God, one aim, one destiny.
Sir.
Yeah, so I wanted to mention, I just wanted to mention that. But going back to the church again, as Dr. Rogers said, the church has been the foundation for most of our success in this country. The church was a place where people could always improve on their vocal talents, their abilities to to act and to be dramatic. That was a forum. That's the only forum that we had. White folk wouldn't let us do it in the schools. We couldn't do it in any other institutions, but the church has always been a place that we could establish ourselves in whatever talent or whatever field we wanted to go in. The call and response from the griots, it helped us
right.
with our speaking abilities and everything. So that's another lecture, the church. But thanks a lot, Bill. Good program. I'm out of here.
All right, my good brother.
All right, Dr. Bruce. And hence
and
the
I'll
need
be on
for
next week, I believe.
Yeah. Empowerment. You got that right. Dr. Bruce will be with us next week. Hang on in there.
And Brother
we'll
Marvin, Brother
him.
George,
yes, sir.
Just want to say one quick thing. This was a good lead-in to me next week. I'm glad that you had Dr. Rogers on today. I was just waiting for him to come on. I said, oh, maybe I got the wrong day. But I'm glad you brought him on before I come in next week.
Oh, we're going to bring him back. We're going to see if we can get him to do chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3. But that's a whole other subject. Let's get back to the lines. Dr. Rogers, you got anything to follow?
That'll be good.
Before we move on. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Dr. Rogers, you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a second.
Yeah, I just wanted to know if you had any comments for Dr. Bruce before we moved on to the next.
I mean, oh. and you know, he's right. His book, Recapturing African Mind, as I said earlier, that's what Carter Woodson was doing as a start-off piece. What happened to us? How did we get crazy like this? What went wrong? Mm. You know, and that's what he did. He broke that down. But remember now, Woodson is doing this in the form of lectures.
Mm.
And he's going through things that he sees as a problem. And then, like I said, when he went to the Journal of Negro History, the problem is we can't get along with each other. You don't like me because I'm dark skinned, and
that's
I don't like
true.
You because you're black. Yeah, so.
That is still true. All right, we're going over to 9872. 9872, if you're talking, we're listening. I got Dr. Rogers live. Do you have a question or comment?
Hello?
Hello. 9872, you're live.
Yes, sir. I have some issues with what has been said. But the bottom line is there is one equalizer called death. As we live, do our best to unite. There was unity at one point in Haiti, Durham, NC. Unity and Floyd McKissick wanted to expand that into a city called Soul City. Why can't we go back to our ways of being unified with the foundation of a community called Haiti, expand that into a city, and then expand that into a state, into a world? That's it.
All right. Thank you, brother. Dr. Rogers, Brother George, would you like to follow up on that?
Brother George,
well,
you want to go first?
All I'm going to do is just make a comment. I think he's talking about the place that Bruce was familiar with.
Yes. Yeah, that's Durham, North Carolina.
Yeah. I think that's what he's talking about. I don't know much about this, so I'll prefer Dr. Rogers to comment on that.
Yeah, Dr. Bruce and I, and myself, we are from Durham. I was born and raised in Durham. He was too.
Okay.
And we do. You know, Haiti was a Black Wall Street, and actually, I won't get into which one was which better, but it was a Black Wall Street. It was very organized and controlled. And Dr. Bridges can tell you, there's some issues in there though that we got to look at about how all of that started. I won't take anything away from it, but very clearly, again, let's get down to what you said, Brother Marvin. You know, logistics of stuff, you know, because sometimes
yes,
you get caught up onto the feel-good history. But we got to go back and you got to look critical. Like the brother said in the beginning, your first comment, caller, he said, you know, you got to be truthful with ourselves. We got to be honest with ourselves in terms of history. some of all that wasn't all that glorious. Now, but it had its value. And I'm going to leave it at that until maybe another time that we can kind of talk about it. But the brother that just spoke is right on it. There was a time. There was a time that we had some things together. We built some institutions. And then very clearly, Marcus Garvey. The UNIA movement was one of the most powerful movements. The movement of Noble Drew Ali. The movement of Elijah Muhammad. These were powerful unity factors. You want to talk about Kwanzaa, Moses? Those were three organizations that displayed that type of thing. So I'll leave it there because it's a little bit more of a lengthy discussion.
And that's what we're talking about, institutions that define our own reality. 0967, you got Dr. Rogers, Dr. George, and myself on the line. Do you have a question or comment? 0967, going once. All right, let's move on over to 0148. And it's okay to listen. That's what it's all about. I'm glad you're listening. 0148, you're live with Dr. Rogers. Do you have a question or comment?
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon, brother. And Dr. Rogers, it's always a pleasure to hear you. Philosophically speaking, sir, I know we need to be critical. I know that Carter G. Woodson was being logical or logistic about things. Can we, as black people, ever admit that there were some things that we did wrong and try to correct those things to move forward? A battery has a positive charge as well as a negative charge, or positive stem and negative stem. So can we as black people ever be able to admit that there were some things that we know we done did wrong, be able to correct those things and move forward?
Thank you, brother, for the call. Dr. Rogers.
Yes, excellent. As always, Brother Lester always gets into that critical analysis. Yes, there has to be. There has to be, Brother Lester. We are going to have to be honest. And I guess your logistical thinkers and your critical thinkers and your community folks are going to have to be honest with each other. The black church is going to have to be honest with each other that it lost its members because of some mess. It's got to do that. They're going to have to commit to that. They're going to have to soundly say that we lost our way. I want to gain it back. Here's what I propose to do to get it back. So like Dr. Bridges said, it was one of the most important institutions in the black community, and they blew it. Honest, bottom line. And it is scripture toting, quoting, Bible toting person that want to stand up and argue that, I'm ready.
All right.
You blew it. All right. The school, the black school. That was, listen, let me tell you something. I went to a segregated school. I went to a segregated black school for most of my years, 12 years, from the first, from kindergarten all the way to the 12th grade. I went to we had a chance to learn independently and privately. But we lost some of that. We messed up. Some we did. You should have taught me, though. They should have taught me about Mark Scott. They should have told me about people like Noble Drew Ali. They should have told me about Elijah Muhammad. They told me about Booker T. Washington. They told me about Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman, but they didn't tell me the full story. They should have told me about the root work that's done down in Mississippi. They should have told me about them funky blues out of Alabama and New Orleans that motivate our lives. They should have told me that. They didn't do that. And then because they wanted us to be good Negroes. They wanted us to be good Negroes.
All right, we're going over to 78. Dr. Roger, you got me excited today. 7841, he said, funky blue. 7841, you live. Got a question, comment for Dr. Rogers.
Hi, yes, I do. Hotel and peace, everyone.
Hotep, my sister.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
There are a couple of points that I heard that I just wanted to add to. I'll start with the one that was most recent, and it was about us as a community and as a people understanding what we did wrong. I am the mother of two amazing black men. As little children, I made sure that the first history that they learned of Africans would never be the history of slavery. That could never come first. Because I never wanted to teach them that we were victims of slavery, but that slavery was a result of a combination of bad choices and a combination of where things fell apart and we became vulnerable to a situation and a chance encounter of gunpowder, right? And so for me, and for the background of education, teaching my children full history was very important, right? And there's a saying in education that says, "Where whatever you hear first will be the basis of the truth." Mm-hmm. And then you'll measure that against whatever else you hear. So for me, it was always important that they heard the message from me first, whenever I could, right? So very early on, we would listen to books in the car, and one of the books we listened to was a novel by Chinua Achebe called Things Fall Apart.
Right.
And in this novel, he talks about sort of the falling apart of certain social structures and basically all of the ways that we became vulnerable as a people to allow something like the Atlantic slave trade to happen. So I say that to say, to respond to the need for us as a people to understand our role in history, good or bad, right? Because slavery only happened for about 500 years, but we were great for thousands of years. So it's really important for me to teach my children that slavery was just a part of our most recent history, and that even only maybe five generations away from slaves, we've accomplished something that no other people on the planet would be able to do in that short time, and that we weren't the first choice for slaves as well, right? They tried it with some other people and it didn't work out. But they had to get the cream of the crop to be able to withstand, populate, and grow wealth for a whole nation.
All right.
Right? But then here we are only five generations away, and the recovery projectile is incredible because of what we are innately. Okay, so yeah, I absolutely agree. It is important that we understand that we too were definitely a part of our own demise, and we too are constantly and always a part of our ascent. Okay, and that what becomes really important after that is that we realize that they've thrown everything at us, including the kitchen sink, and still we rise, and still we rise, and still we rise. The second thing was someone mentioned, I think I was Dr. Rod, I can't remember which brother it was, but he said that religion was stronger than facts. Was that the statement or something thereof? And I wanted to mention why that's true. And it's true because belief is stronger than fact. And the reason belief is stronger than fact is because belief is intertwined throughout our brain system and our mind and goes on to facilitate our reality, right? And so a fact would be an external concept that we would have to ingest, and in education is called accommodate, right? So information that you learn from the outside, it could be a new math, it could be a new history, it could be anything new, then what happens is your brain has to make a new space for that. But a belief is part of your mind's core memory, especially if it's a belief that you've been taught as a child. That's a part of the core of who you are. And so that will always be stronger. And to ingest or to accommodate a new thought, that has to be a very conscious and deliberate act, right? So
true.
That's why it's really important to address our spiritual health as well, right? Not to kind of be condescending or not to negate or not even to debate the concepts that we've adapted basically in order to survive, right? They took our drums, they made us, they changed our names, but still we rise, right? So we took certain concepts in order to accommodate our original beliefs, right? And Jesus or Prophet Isa, he may have looked the way it was depicted, but being the great people that we are, we got some significant messages out of his teachings, right? And a lot of those messages are direct consequences to our existence today, right? We are our ancestors' greatest dreams. We are the answers to our ancestors' prayers, right? So Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Zen, Buddhist, all of those things, it's taught from childhood. Again, they're part of the core of who we are, right? And now we might get older and go on to get exposed to other concepts and other belief systems, but that takes an intentional and deliberate act. So when we talk about knowing our history, we too must include understanding who we are spiritually, right?
Okay, sister, I got to cut you there because we're running short on time. But thank you for the comment. And I want to wrap this up with final comments from Dr. Rogers because we're running short on time. But I do thank you for your comments. Dr. Rogers, final comments?
Yes. I do like
before
the fact
we wrap up.
I do like the fact that everybody is saying that we need to look at our challenges and understand that. That's one of those parts of that logistical study that you talked about. That's a part of that. We need to have that understanding. You don't need to dwell in it, but we need to understand why is it that they did not teach me about Kemet when I was in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why did they teach me about the Congo people? Why did they tell me Tarzan? Why did they allow me to go to the movie to see Tarzan? They should have blocked me from going to the movie to see Tarzan. And they didn't. So, we need to talk about it.
All right, Brother George. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. Final comments, Brother George.
No, sir, I'm good. I just really enjoyed the show today. And the last sister that spoke, you know, I enjoyed what she was saying, and I enjoyed what Dr. Rogers was saying. I enjoyed the comments from the listening audience. You know, it was just a wonderful show, brother. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. And we're definitely going to invite you back for Chapter 1, if you don't mind, of Miseducation of the Negro by Carter G. Woodson. I just want to say a couple of things before we go. We made some mistakes, right? And the brother said we got to be honest with ourselves, which is true. Absolutely true. And like Brother Stan used to say, we need correction for direction. Although we've made some mistakes, we can turn it around. But it takes work. It takes the willingness to do the work. And it takes a reframing of the mind. And that is to recapture that African mind that we're talking about. Join us next week for Dr. Bruce as we continue our series on recapturing the African mind. And again, we thank Dr. Rogers for giving us such an illustrious lecture on Dr. Carter G. Woodson's work. Join us next week, Empowerment Saturday. Tell a friend. And again, it's up to you to do the work of working on yourself. Peace and blessings, brothers and sisters.
Peace.
Without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know, if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my when I'm laid to my rest.
Deep and wonder, you're sure to find,
and the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with scars, still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach, oh, to reach the unreachable.
Oh, yeah.